You're listening to Thunder Quack Podcast Network.
I'd like you to meet our distinguished team.
Ooh!
Team, meet Lil Donald's 1 and 2. Boys, meet Charles, Sylvia, Cameron, Philippe, Fish Breath, Simone, Virgil, Beverly, Nicholas, Alistair, Benji, Dr. Krill, and of course the ever-feisty Hans.
That's the team?
Mm-hmm. Their natural bioluminescence can light our way if need be. It guarantees we always have a light source as we go deeper.
See? Not weird. Brilliant and resourceful and...
He's singing to them.
Hello and welcome back to Cartoon Afternoon for DuckTales Season 2, Episode 2, The Depths of Cousin Feathery. I'm one of your hosts, Curtis Findlay.
I'm your other host, Michael Cohen.
Well, we had a pretty good second episode. I don't think that it was quite as good as last week, that's for sure. In fact, there were parts of it that frustrated me. But we can get into that. That's just a little tease for what's going to come up next in our episode. Let's talk about some news before we jump into that stuff.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, something like 10 years ago, I think, Disney started putting out the Disney Afternoon on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And they released, they released 3 volumes of DuckTales, 2 volumes of Chip and Dale, 2 volumes of Tailspin, 2 volumes of DuckTales, and 1 volume of Gummy Bears. And then they just kind of stopped. And nothing happened, and none of the shows were complete. They could have done 1 volume more for each of those shows,
and
finished them all off, but they didn't. And then, probably about maybe 3 years ago, I think, through the Disney Movie Club, they released the last volume of Tailspin on DVD, and all of Goof Troop, and that was exclusive to people who were part of the Disney Movie Club.
Hmm.
And I got those and they were fantastic. And then they eventually made their way to the retail market. And then just a few weeks ago, Disney Movie Club surprised everybody and said, here's DuckTales Volume 4 with the remaining episodes, 24, 25 episodes, I think, of DuckTales.
Yeah.
And so that was through the Disney Movie Club as well. So I picked up that set and I've been watching it and it's great. These are episodes that I have only seen like 1 time because they aired, I can't remember how it worked, but DuckTales had a syndicated season. And those are the episodes that I'm most familiar with. And then they went through a second season where they introduced Gizmo Duck and Bubba, and I know those episodes as well. And then they had a third season, and I think that it might have been shown only on ABC on Saturday morning or something like that. Mm. And I watched those when they first came out. I know I did because I have a very strong memory of the season finale with the Golden Goose. But then I never saw them again. And then DuckTales moved in the Disney Afternoon. It moved to the 3 o'clock time slot because it was always from 3 to 5. And no child can watch it at 3 o'clock because that's when school gets out and you just can't get home in time unless you live right across the street from the school.
Yeah.
So I never watched DuckTales after that. And, but now I can. And these episodes are not the greatest. The animation kind of goes a little bit downhill and the inclusion of some of these new characters gets quite redundant after a while. But I'm glad they're there, and I hope that we're able to see a few more releases from these classic Disney afternoon shows.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would love it if they could finish Darkwing, which only got its two volumes, right? And cuts off right before all the awesome stuff starts happening with Justice Ducks and all that stuff. So it's always a real bummer when I pull those DVDs out and want to watch some stuff, and it's like, those are some of my favorite episodes and they're not included. So it would be really cool if they went ahead and finished everything, but I mean, we'll see, hopefully.
Yeah, it's so strange because all of these other companies, Warner Brothers and Nickelodeon and stuff, they get all of their content out. If you could have all however many seasons of SpongeBob SquarePants if you want, or Rugrats.
Yeah.
But we can't get Darkwing Duck on DVD. Disney just doesn't like to put out season sets. I don't know what it is about the way they feel they can market their materials or something, but they prefer their 3 to 4 disc, just little compilation discs, or that's it. It was a big surprise when Gravity Falls got a complete series release.
Yeah,
no one expected that to happen.
Here's one for you: Tron Uprising has never had a home video release, at least not a complete season. I think there might have been like a DVD or something that had a few episodes on it, but it's only one season, and it's never had a complete, to my knowledge, at least not a North American release. I don't know. I've never really looked into whether it got like a UK release or anything like that. But I mean, they just kind of let that one go entirely. And there are other shows that have been on Disney XD and Disney Channel, stuff like that, that just zero home release whatsoever. So,
well, Tron Uprising was just one season, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes
that's all they ended up making, but it was definitely intended to be a multi-season situation. Sure,
right, of course. But I think it seems to me like Disney will release their little three episodes at a time on a semi-regular basis while the show is still on, and then once the show is off the air, or once they're not making any new episodes, they won't, like, all the merchandise kind of gets stopped right then and there. So if they haven't released all the episodes, that's all you're gonna get.
Yeah.
Becomes a cult favorite like Gravity Falls.
Maybe there is a complete series release on DVD. Interesting. For Tron Uprising.
Are you looking at it right now?
I just did a really quick Google search, but interesting. I've never seen this.
Well, they certainly didn't promote it, I guess.
No. No, I'm guessing it wasn't a North American release, but Amazon brings up nothing. There's some music from Tron Uprising, but the prices are ridiculous. So that tells me that this is not, I don't think that this is an official release. I think this might be a bootleg.
Yeah, you can get them all digitally, it looks like, if you wanted to, through iTunes or Amazon Prime.
That's a gimme, right? Because like those digital distribution networks are dead simple to submit to. So
all of the DuckTales and Darkwing Duck, all those episodes, the ones that haven't been released, are available on iTunes if you wanted to. I'm told that they are slightly edited because Disney Channel needed to cut out a few seconds here and there for whatever times they had, different time requirements. So those are the ones that are online, those are the ones that are streaming, but the DVD ones are not those ones.
Those are the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The original cuts.
Well, I mean, I hope that, that a lot of this stuff ends up on the Disney app, right? The Disney streaming app. But, we don't really know yet what that's going to look like. It's kind of, they've been kind of vague about what kind of programming is going to be on there, other than some of the new original programming that they're doing. So,
right. They've only really been talking about the new stuff.
Yeah. So hopefully there's some extra bonus stuff in terms of, like, it would be cool if Darkwing and DuckTales and stuff were on there. And I could see them doing that because the show is quite popular, right? So it would be a great way to get kids into the older stuff as well.
Okay, this one is, let me see, what are we talking about again? Oh yeah, Depths of Cousin Feathery. Huey and Dewey are led on an adventure by their distant Uncle Feathery, who takes them to the depths of Scrooge's deep sea laboratory. Special guest Tom Kenny as Uncle Feathery. So the original air date here is October 27, 2018. Writer Christian Magalis and Matthew Humphreys as the director. So I want to just say off the bat, there is one scene in this. This is not one of my favorite scenes. I just want to point out this scene where they are. This is one of my favorite scenes. I'm just going to go into one of my top favorite moments here. So they take this elevator shaft down all the way down to the bottom of the ocean and go into this laboratory where Feathery's made his home. And he has this curtain up on the wall, and he's about to reveal the big thing that he's been talking about, the big discovery everybody's been waiting for. He's like, "And here you go. You must be hungry. Can I make you a sandwich, a hot soup, or something?" Like, he totally tries to distract them again. I'm like, that is exactly how I feel about this episode right now. The reaction that Huey and Dewey had, because I felt like there was so much filler and just stringing along in this episode.
Oh, really?
I felt like I don't know, I was waiting for something to happen and it kept on just stringing me along, and then all of a sudden he throws in that line and it's like, yeah, this is exactly what this whole episode has been.
Yeah.
It turned at that point and I loved the last half after that happened.
Yeah, but once Mitzi shows up.
yes. But leading up to there, it was like, come on, let's get to the point already.
I get that. I get where you're coming from on that. I actually really liked this episode. I really liked Feathery. I thought that it was a great characterization. I thought, most importantly, he's different from anybody else that we've met so far. Because we've met a lot of zany characters of different archetypes, but Feathery is off in a different way. He's not I think the cool thing about the character is that there's no ego, and one of the biggest things that this show has really played on is the different types of sort of egomaniacs, right? And that true. And it makes that's sense because like you're talking about Scrooge McDuck and Flintheart Glomgold and Magica and Mark Beeks and Gyro and
Louie,
and even all three of the nephews, right? Donald is a classic egomaniac. I mean, like, it's one of his defining traits is when we talked about it last season with the little Disney Channel interstitial where everybody else does the little Mickey Mouse head and Donald tries to do the Donald head and it ends up, you know, going crazy on him, right? Like, it's sort of the duck side of the Disney universe. That's what it's all about. So we get to Feathery and he's the black sheep of the family, and that means that he's actually like, he has like no ego. He considers his work to be important and all of that sort of thing, but without the self-importance, because you get to the end and you discover that he's just the custodian and he doesn't he doesn't have a problem with that. He's like, well, no, I'm like, Uncle Scrooge wanted me to take care of the deep sea laboratory. That's what I do. Right.
Yep.
And so I don't know. I thought that aspect of it was great. And then Huey and Dewey have some great interplay and some great moments throughout the episode. I mean, like, it starts off really strong with the rings on the, and the connection between Feathery and Huey is so good. And like, sort of thinking back to the beginning of the episode and then to what we learn about Feathery, it's like, it starts with Dewey in a towel going like, what was so important? And he's like, check out this tree. And then he's like licking it. And it's like, this is what was so important. I couldn't finish my shower. Right. Like, it's like they plant that at the beginning. And sort of pull that along all the way through. And there's tons of great gags all throughout this episode. So I don't know. I really liked it. I thought that they did a really great job of playing with the characterizations and stuff. It kept me entertained.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But... No, I agree. I liked this, to see Huey and Dewey together. We don't get to see just the two of them interacting that much. So I did enjoy that. The interplay between the two of them was great. I loved the coming together at the very end when Dewey has to trust Huey.
Yeah.
Just his junior woodchuck skills or whatever, and because so often he's always just kind of brushed off.
Yeah.
And so it was nice for him to get a little time to shine there.
Yeah.
And sure. You're right. Feathery was really great, and I did enjoy seeing him, and I especially am happy to see him animated, and because this is his first animated appearance. He's got a long history in the comics, and it's nice to see him get some recognition. And it was really nice to see people online really excited to see him in the show as well.
Yeah.
So I'm happy about that. I just thought it moved a little slow. Well, I've said one of my top moments. Why don't you go for one of yours?
So I'll jump into one of mine. I mean, like, right near the beginning of the episode when we get the transition and it just starts with, did we just steal a sub? And that whole scene is great. Well, it launch pad's in there, so of course it's going to be great. But like pulling a piece off of the radio off and being like, oh, it broke. It's not my fault. And then Launchpad being like, well, it's a good thing that we're not on a real adventure because that would be dangerous. And then him getting called off.
I liked it when sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it. Just him
getting called by that siren
so that they can pay it off later on in the episode.
Just like what was it, the Gladstone Gander episode with the panda. It was perfect. I loved also just the little touch. This isn't one of my top moments, but you just reminded me of it when he surfaces and at that lighthouse.
Yeah.
And he just crashes the sub a little bit. It just bumps into it, and then he goes around. He's got to get a crash in there somewhere. And
it's Launchpad. He's got to crash it. It's a requirement. Yep. Yeah. What's your next one?
Okay, I really liked the scene with the giant worms.
Yeah.
That were, like, strangling them, and especially when they're trying to come up with compliments, and they just don't know how to compliment these worms. They're just terrible at it. And Huey has this really scientific compliment that doesn't make sense, and he's just like, I'm too panicked to be sincere.
Yeah.
Too panicked to be sincere. And then he ends up just kissing the worm. And Dewey, as he's passing out, you kissed a worm.
Yeah.
So gross.
I love it because I love that even in that moment, they're still obnoxious kids, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. That was definitely... and the animation, like, they took such pains to animate the lips coming together, and you're just like, oh, God, what is happening?
With the slime and everything,
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed when they were heading down in the diving bell thing. And Feathery starts doing like the Disneyland explanation of things, and is please keep all your hands and legs and blah, 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 inside the vehicle.
Inside the cart at all time. Yeah.
And then the classic line of and please keep an eye on any children, and they go back, we are children, and he's like, oh, then ignore everything I just said. But I really liked like that tag on it as a joke was great. But then I also love when he's explaining what the deep sea laboratory is, and he's like, oh, it's the future in the past. And to me, that's a bit of a reference to Epcot, which, you know, like hardcore Disney Parks fans know that Epcot stands for the Experimental Prototype City of Tomorrow. But yep. Most people just go, it's just called Epcot. It's the one with the big space globe thing. Yeah. And then Pointless World Pavilions.
Oh, and the Carousel of Progress.
Yeah.
I go on that every time. And my wife says, do we have to? I love it.
Exactly.
It's so out of date now.
All of Epcot is, do we have to?
It's true, yes.
Yeah, so I just like that, because then like he goes through like and lays out what each individual like little node in the complex is, and it's very much, I mean, like Epcot did not end up being what Walt Disney envisioned Epcot as, but it was supposed to be like a self-contained city. Like an actual city. People who worked at the Disney park were supposed to live in Epcot and then go out to the other parks. And that never came to fruition. Instead, it's just a bunch of pseudoscience pavilions and stuff like that. And
the World Showcase.
Yes, yeah. So it's this, like, I just thought that was a really cool... I like it when the references in DuckTales are more than just references to other, like, to old DuckTales episodes. And they go outside of that to do other cool references for Disney fans, stuff that would really...
And a few snide comments or something like that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. What's your next one?
My favorite scene is definitely the climax when they are escaping the giant krill.
Yeah.
And they have to like swim through the jet blasts and stuff. There's just some incredible animation. I was blown away by that scene because it just looks so great. The way they're swimming, the bubbles, the lighting on it especially, it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, the action towards the end with all of the vents and everything was pretty impressive. It was pretty cool stuff. It was very cinematic. Like there were some really yes. cool moments with Mitzi, I sort of like slowly revealing, and giving the audience a heads up and some clues before the characters got them, which I thought was fun. Like that's always a fun way to sort of make it sort of engage, right? So that you're kind of like, oh, I think I know what that is. I think I get it. And then watching the characters realize what it is, it makes you feel like you're a step ahead, right?
I really liked, and that was smart writing because because Feathery is a character who's odd and does unusual things, but by the end of the episode, you realize that all of the unusual things that he was doing had a purpose, and it all tied together in the end.
Yeah.
It was like just the fact that his crew were krill. That could have just been a gag, like a one-off gag or whatever, but it had a huge payoff in the end. And I thought that was it was just a good way to write it.
Yeah. It's just like very skillful, right? To to have it reveal itself slowly. But yeah, I like it because it is a kid's show, right? So giving the kids watching the sense of discovery before they're told what it is.
Yeah.
I think that's a really smart thing to do, because then then they feel like they feel adventuring smart. Too, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, just really, really great writing in that sense. Just in the writing / direction of the episode. One of my last favorite moments was the gag with the hair when they get out of they put on their scuba suits or whatever and swim down, and when they get out of the thing, they each pull the head part off of the wetsuits.
Off of their wetsuits, yeah.
And Feathery does it first, and his like chin hairs and stuff go doing out, and then Dewey does it, and his hair goes floop back into the way that his hair always looks, and then with Huey, he pulls his off, and he's still wearing the ball cap underneath, and it kind of goes flops back, it was just such a like. When Feathery did it, it was like, oh, ha ha, Feathery, he's goofy. Like, he's a silly character, right? But then when they did it with the others, it's like, oh, they're all related. yeah, it was a good moment. I really liked that.
I think that, I had something I was going to say. In the very first scene where we have a close up of Huey kind of examining that the tree stump or whatever it is, yeah. The little part of the tree, I felt like there was the animation felt a little off to me. I felt like I could really see, like, it felt very flash. All the pieces were moving independently, and I felt that with that scene with the hats as well, kind of popping up there, it didn't feel as as organic, I think, as the rest of the episode did. And I'm not sure what the disconnect was there, but that was just me.
Yeah, I can see that, because it is very sort of static, except for one thing moving, right? But I don't know. I just liked the gag. Like, the gag was a good gag.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It was well timed.
Yeah. Then I have a bonus one here where I just have to mention Launchpad coming back at the end of the episode, having gone off on a clearly epic adventure. And I love the connection here that when they, like, it's Gladstone and then Feathery, and it's like, we go on these sort of like different types of adventures with Gladstone and Feathery. That, like, the tone is a little bit different, but
yeah,
it, like, then we cut back to Launchpad, and Launchpad has gone on a very classic DuckTales adventure. We just weren't
even,
there for
I would
it.
Say even more classic, or even more epic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally, and more epic, right?
And in both instances, he's dressed in the garb of whatever adventure he's on.
Yeah.
He's got weapons from that adventure. He's even got an animal on his back from each adventure.
Yeah. So, I that bringing that gag back was genius. And they just nail it. Like, his outfit is so good. It's so classic comics, He-Man, Hercules type of thing. Where you're like, oh, he clearly went on an adventure to Atlantis. Yep. And I love,
move over Jason Momoa.
Yeah. I love that that it was a siren that siren mermaid thing that called him. Because that's a reference back to a classic DuckTales episode.
Oh, for sure.
We've talked about before. They nailed that. They nailed that. I love it when they use Launchpad in that way. Don't get me wrong, I would love to go on those adventures with Launchpad, but it's almost better that we don't get
whatever
to.
They come up with would be a disappointment.
Exactly. It's like I have to like I fill that in, and I love it when they're like, where did you go? And he was like, oh, you know, just scuba diving, looking at like ocean stuff. And he's got like a trident and armor and like a starfish or whatever it was, like an octopus, like attached to him, and you're just like, obviously you were off on a ridiculous journey, but yeah, I love it. They nail it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice that he had a part in this one as well.
Yeah.
The cast was very small. Only three, for the most part, it was only three people in any given scene.
Yeah, Donald and Scrooge had a moment at the beginning, but that was it.
Yeah. And then once Feathery comes, Launchpad is out. So opposed to the last episode where everyone was in it, this one was much more scaled back.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was definitely like a much more personal sort of episode where it was really about these two characters, which, I mean, like, that's, we got a lot of that last season, right? So it's you can kind of see that they're going back to formula a little bit there, but doing something new, showing us two characters together that we haven't really seen together, like you said before.
I read online someone was complaining that they were very disappointed that Della was not even mentioned in this one. And I think that, you know, we're going to see that in this season. They're probably not going, at the very earliest, we'll see Della at the mid-season, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't think that we're, my guess is that they probably won't even make contact till toward the end of the season when they maybe go to rescue her at that point.
Yeah, I would guess that, right? Like, I think that it's one of those things that, like, it's not going to be important until it's important again.
Yeah, because this, Della is this season's Magicka.
Yeah.
And if you know, if you think about how many times we saw Magicka, it was like maybe three times through the whole 20-whatever episode season.
Yeah.
And then they mentioned her a couple more times after that, and that's probably all we're going to get of Della this season as well.
Yeah, I would imagine so. That makes sense to me that you know, like, you want it to be special. It's if we're going to build towards something, that's kind of the point, right? But yeah.
Well, we've heard our favorite parts. Shall we see what everybody else's favorite parts are?
Yeah, let's do that.
We had some great comments on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah.
So I think let's just see if we can address the Twitter ones first. Jordan really liked the line, "I kissed a worm." Alexandria liked, "Well, you thought I could be a scientist," at the very end there. And it's like, do I just have to, you know, fill out a form or something?
Yeah.
That was good too. Joanna says the illuminated lights from the krills, including Mitzi. She loved Mitzi. That I did too. And Rafaela said Feathery constantly calling Huey and Dewey little Donalds. That was good. And then Huey lost his temper just like Donald.
Yeah.
And she also liked the scenes showing how Huey is such a little Feathery. They really played up the similarities there.
Yeah.
Because, Huey is just more of an odd kid.
Yeah.
In this version of DuckTales. So, yeah, it's nice to see that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
Over on Facebook, we've got some long comments on Facebook, but they actually have some really good thoughts to them. So if you don't mind, I think we should take some time and read these.
Yeah, sure.
Joey says the end credits were pretty good. Not a fan of this episode. So yeah, he didn't like this one. Joey, I'm half with you. There were some great parts, but I thought some of it was a little slow. Roy says, I thought this was a good episode. Not as great as last week. I enjoyed the character of Feathery. I hope to see him again involved with the rest of the cast. I think one of my favorite things was Launchpad's story. It was just like his adventure in the Gladstone episode. He had his own adventure off screen with a former love and then shows back up at the end dressed up from his adventure. This is the second time this sort of thing has happened. Maybe it's a reoccurring gag now. I certainly hope so. But not too reoccurring.
Yeah.
I don't want this to happen every episode.
No.
But now and then, it's just excellent.
No, we need actual Launchpad adventures as well.
Yes. Okay, and then someone by the name of Maciek, and if I've mispronounced that, I am incredibly sorry, wrote a really long comment. Let's see here. Favorite parts. I like when we see Feathery for the first time and he's upside down, a perfect visual introduction of his oddness. The song is also pretty, especially when Huey sings it, almost like a lullaby, gentle, but there is something a tad haunting about it. And actually, the lullaby reminded me of the lullaby that Darkwing sings to Goslin in the pilot episode of Darkwing Duck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is the secret code to the machine that... it's Goslin that teaches the lullaby to Darkwing.
Yeah.
Because it's her dad that sang it. Yeah, that's right.
No, her grandpa, but that's okay.
Her grandpa?
Yeah.
Yeah. Got to go watch those episodes again. I really like the part where they are running away from the monster and Feathery bravely goes back to save Huey and leads the kids back to his elevator, which shows that despite being so strange, he is in fact a responsible and caring adult just in his own way. I think that's an interesting point there. Because he was actually very responsible. He's just a little odd.
Yeah, he's just weird. Yeah.
I think this episode was great adventure-wise. I love the colors from the underwater geysers, by the way, and the monster, especially for people like me who find being so deep underwater in the unknown or trapped in a submarine legitimately scary. I think they exploit this fear nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when, like, the glass is cracking and the water's coming in.
Yeah, that's a shared thing for me. Like, the moment when they're following the krill, and it's just that huge, extreme wide shot of, like, way far out of just these three figures following these little dots in this expansive ocean. That's just terrifying to me. I'm like, these kids are incredibly brave to do stuff like this. These small
or when the spotlight flickers and goes out and they're just plunged in complete black because there is literally no light down there. Totally scary. Okay, let's see. There's more comment here. I just don't think that the script was very strong humor-wise. And I don't know if I agree with that one. There were kind of gags all throughout. On one hand, not being over the top with the comedy makes the adventure aspect stronger, which works very well for the scenes where the kids are in peril. But as far as I recall, it's the first episode that I didn't laugh out loud once. I hated all the licking, and Dewey being obsessed with his name got really old and annoying fast. Also, Launchpad having an epic adventure off-screen was funny in the Gladstone episode, but here it just felt a lazy reuse of the same gag, and I think we have to disagree with that point. And then Feathery felt like a missing link between Fenton and Launchpad. There's an interesting comment, because I could see that for sure. But with so many wacky characters already, I think it was a challenge to make him somehow unique. Aside from that, I think he was a very good representation of the character from the comics, and they made him extremely likable. On one hand, shame they didn't have Donald and Feathery interact. Yeah, I was kind of disappointed that Feathery didn't really get to talk to Donald or Scrooge, since those are the two guys that he mainly interacts with in the comics.
Mm.
But I hope that we see that in another episode.
I think Feathery will be back. I mean, you don't cast Tom Kenny and then leave him on the sidelines. That's
true, true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, there's a few more other comments, but this has gone on for a long time, so I'm just going to wrap up with this one comment that says, I feel like while I have some issues, I think that it was a good episode, and the moral, nothing wrong with being odd, being strange doesn't equal stupid, was great for the kids, and I think that's a really good takeaway.
Yeah.
It's like you can be yourself, and don't let other people try to convince you that what you're doing is weird or strange or dumb.
Yeah, or that if you're weird or strange, that it's not a bad thing. Sometimes that can be a cool thing.
Yeah, in this case, Feathery figured out the whole thing and saved everyone, and he did a good job.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great portrayal. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I have a few things for the behind-the-scenes section here.
Okay.
I had written down here Disneyland reference, but you already mentioned that one.
Oh, yeah.
at the very beginning of the episode, there's that row of different types of telephones on Scrooge's desk.
Yes.
And they all have little titles, little names on them. So one of them is Dismal Downs. It's a direct line to Scrooge's castle. And then there's one that goes straight to the money bin. A phone specifically for Cape Suzette.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, he has a direct line to Cape Suzette. I don't know what the purpose of that is, but hopefully we'll find out in a future episode. And then there's one phone that had, it was labeled Great Written. And that is a reference to old DuckTales, an episode called Much Ado About Scrooge. Because Scrooge finds, or he discovers that there is a lost play by William Drakespeare, and it's hidden in a haunted castle in Great Written.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's a little reference there. So notes about Feathery. He was created by Dick Kinney and Al Hubbard. Dick Kinney's a writer and Al Hubbard is an artist. And so I think it's funny that he's created by Kinney and voiced by Kenny. And then also he first appeared in Topolio, number 453 in 1964 in Italy. So he was created by those two guys, Kinney and Hubbard. They were American. But he first appeared in an Italian comic, and he is really, really popular in Italy and in Brazil, among other places. And it's only recently, like in the last 10 years or so, that I guess maybe since IDW has had the license to reprint Disney comics, like classic Disney comics, have they been bringing in a lot of the European comics, because every other publisher who's had the license to reprint Disney comics has really just stuck to kind of Carl Barks and Don Rosa comics and a lot of the American stuff. But IDW is really, they're doing their part to translate the work and bring it overseas here. So we're getting a lot of really cool stuff.
Nice.
As I was poking around online, learning a little bit more about Feathery, I found out a couple of things. Depending on which country is publishing, Feathery is colored differently. So in Italy, he wears, he always is wearing a turtleneck sweater, and he's wearing a red one in Italy, and he wears a green one in when Edgemont publishes them in like French and I think in Great Britain and stuff, and in Brazil he wears yellow.
Okay.
And no, actually, maybe it's pink. Edgemont is pink. But anyway, he wears different colors depending on which country is publishing him. And so his two most popular countries, the one where Feathery is most loved, are Brazil and Italy, which is yellow and red. And but if you notice here in this episode of DuckTales, he's wearing yellow sweater and a red coat over top of it. He's wearing both yellow and red. And I don't know if that's to signify his significance in those countries, or they just wanted to make him look kind of cooler with a jacket. But I thought that was kind of neat.
Cool.
Also, one last comment here. Feathery describes Scrooge McDuck's sublab. He says it's the sublab of the future, but it was actually built in the past in 1964. And I already mentioned that the year that Feathery was created, 1964.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Pretty straightforward Easter egg on that last one.
Yeah.
Cool.
There you go. That's all I have.
Cool. Should we check in with our junior woodchucks and see what they thought?
Sure. Yeah, let's do that.
Hello, this is the Junior Woodchuck Podcast, and today we're going to be talking about the depths of Feathery Duck.
I am Peter.
I am Milo.
And we already said the intro. So
Peter, what is your funniest part?
Well, like when they first got to that like giant like buoy tower lighthouse, because Launchpad found someone. Like, I'm pretty sure a mermaid, and it was really weird.
My funniest part was when, at the end, Launchpad came up with, like, a sea monster on his arm and a trident in his hand.
Octopus on his back.
It was very funny. You should really watch this episode.
Yeah, and we are introducing a new character. In this episode, we found a new character named
Feathery Duck.
And he was... Well, they thought he was a scientist.
He had a team out of krill.
Yeah, it was really weird.
The most exciting part for me was dun-dun. When we first saw that giant monster.
Yeah, that was really cool. Really cool. Really krill. Get it?
Also, I have another funniest part. When Huey kissed the sea worm.
That was so gross.
And funny.
Okay.
I'm signing out.
I'm signing out too. See you next time.
On the guys. Junior Woodchuck Podcast!
Cool. I guess it's time to check in with our lucky dime rating, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think? Where are you sitting with this one?
Okay, so I'm going to probably go middle of the road because I liked half of it and I wasn't so keen on half of it. So I'm probably just going to go with a 3. 30 cents.
Yeah, you know what? I'm right there as well. 30 cents.
Okay.
I really liked it. I really like some aspects, but I do like it is slow. It's not an episode that I'm going to like put up there with some of my favorites, but it's not a bad episode. It's a good episode. It's kind of nice. Like last week's episode was very fast paced. So it was nice to slow it down this week. And just kind of have a little bit more of a character focus, than, you know, hijinks and action. So,
right. Yeah. Right. Okay, well, if you go over to Twitter and see our Twitter poll, we had, I think this is the most votes we had in one of our votes. We had 116 votes for this poll.
Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure that's the highest we've had so far. And let's see how it stacks up. Shadow War, of course, took it again. 47% of the votes went to Shadow War. 26% of the votes went to Last Crash of the Sun Chaser. 18% went to Most Dangerous Game Night. And only 9% to Secrets of Castle McDuck. So unfortunately, Secrets is out, and we are putting this one in. The poll is now running on Twitter, so go over there and cast your vote.
Awesome. That's fairly predictable, I think. I think that makes sense. But
I think so, yep.
Sad to see Castle McDuck go.
That was a good episode, but out of those four, I think it was the weakest.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that that the depths of Cousin Feathery isn't going to stack up against those three either.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I guess that's it other than the next episode. What's our next episode?
The next episode is The Ballad of Duke Bologna. And the description here is, after his disappearance, Glomgold resurfaces as anything but his ever-scheming self. While Webby and Louie try to uncover the truth behind who is Duke Bologna. So it's nice that we see the two of the kids that we didn't see in this one are going to be the stars of this next episode.
Yeah, it's a good balance. And we'll get some Webby focus, which will be nice.
And Webby and Louie don't hang out that much.
That's true, yeah.
They kind of, so it'll be good to see their interplay a little bit.
Cool. Well, my guess is that Duke Bologna is probably Glomgold. But
yeah, you think so? Yeah,
I think so. Cool. Awesome. Well, that's it for this week's episode, right?
I think so.
Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you on the next one.
And yeah, we'll see you next afternoon.
Don't forget you can stay up to date with all the latest DuckTales news by heading to cartoonafternoon.com. DuckTales.com, where you'll find everything DuckTales and Disney cartoon related for the shows that we cover. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ToonAfternoon, as well as on Twitter at ToonAfternoon. And if you want to send us an email, you can do that by sending us an email at ToonAfternoon@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Twitter. You can find me at Curtis Findlay, KURTISFINDLAY.
And I'm on Twitter at ArkWulf, ArkWulf. And don't forget that we are part of the Thunderquack Podcast Network. Head to thunderquack.com to check out all the other great podcasts in our network. And if you want to support us, you can do that two ways. First, by heading to store.thunderquack.com to pick up some merch. Or you can head to patreon.com/thunderquack and pledge your support over there. It's a monthly pledge. As low as $1 a month gets you access to the exclusive Thunderquack podcast, as well as the Thunderquack Patreon Facebook group. So that's patreon.com/thunderquack. And thank you to everybody who does support us over there.
Disney Dad's Cartoon Afternoon is not associated with the Disney company in any way. All characters, titles, music, and everything is all copyright of their respective owners. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Disney Dad's Cartoon Afternoon.